The following podcast has been recorded under the influence of alcohol. While not intentionally offensive, things are said, feelings may be hurt, and fucks are not given. Clearly, it's the beer's fault.
The Good Beer Bad Movie Night Podcast.
Bienvenido al Noche de Cerveza Bueno, Película Malo. Soy Pedro, y esta noche todos nosotros el película Mil Máscaras como mío Azteca. Pero, antes todos los tantos, por favor, ayúdame con una hola grande a mis amigas, amigos. Dave, mucho gusto.
Hola, hola, ¿cómo estás?
Saludos, Kathleen.
Guten Tag.
Troy, ¿cómo está?
I'm good.
How are you doing? Good. Okay. Very good. That's the extent of my Spanish. Welcome to Good Beer Bad Movie Night, episode 37. This is our Cinco de Mayo episode. And with all of our Cinco de Mayo episodes, we do some sort of Spanish or Mexican horror movie. Is this really a horror movie? I suppose.
I'd say it's anyway. Got horror elements to it. Sure.
True. And it's
but that's just the acting.
Shockingly contemporary from 2007.
What? 2007? This movie looks like an after-school special from the early 90s.
It does, doesn't it? From 2007, this is Mil Máscaras versus the Aztec Mummy.
Mil Máscaras
is it? Yes, he is a national treasure. Anyway, we'll get into all that fun stuff. But as the show goes, we will do a six-minute synopsis to talk about or to go through the plot top to bottom. And I think, Troy, you've got that going on, right?
I do.
Okay, excellent, because I didn't do it. We have two beers to talk about tonight. Both have Spanish names, I think.
Spanish-esque?
Sort of. Anyway, and then, of course, we'll talk about both those beers, we'll talk about the movie, and then we're going to wrap up our show this evening with our six-pack rating, where we tell you just how drunk you need to be to enjoy this film. But before we go into all that craziness, if we just want to dive into it, why don't... Troy, are you ready for a six-minute synopsis?
I am ready.
I've been looking forward to this all week long to hear what you have to say.
Oh, don't get your hopes up too high there, Pete, but we can...
Hold on, I got to set my timer.
Oh, yeah. Right.
And do we have a punishment ready?
I have my song since they're here, excellent. And I usually leave them at excellent. Home. So
speaking of punishments, Kathleen, can you describe to our listeners what the punishment is?
So for right now, though, we are working on something a little more extensive or creative
permanent.
Moving forward. But right now, if you are under or over the six-minute synopsis by... It's 30 seconds.
I think
seconds,
it was 30 seconds.
If you are over or under by 30 seconds, then you have to have a little punishment. And your punishment is you have to sing a little song. So... You may have heard in our March episode that, unfortunately, Dave's birthday coincided with being the first member to have to sing the song. So Dave sang a song of his own writing.
Yes, hoist by my own petard.
So
like
I have a couple other ones
right.
That...
Petard!
Yes. I have a couple other ones that I have done up a little doodle on. If Troy messes this up, I'll have to run upstairs and give it to him.
Oh.
Or he's got some too in his notebook that he could sing as well. So now that we've completely psyched him out as he's getting ready to do this by threatening him with having to sing something ridiculous in public, which really is not a threat for Troy Carlson.
That's kind of my MO. Honest.
Yeah, exactly.
It's your MO.
It's my MO. All right, you guys ready for this? Should I start?
Troy, are you ready?
Yep.
All right, let's do it.
All right.
Go.
We start the movie by following two simultaneous events. Mil Mascaras has taken his fiancée to a fine dining restaurant, and several people in headdresses and loincloths are dancing around a sarcophagus in the Aztec temple, in an Aztec temple. Mil winds up getting dumped by his fiancée because she feels like she just doesn't really know him. Is it because of my mask? And one of the guys in the temple winds up slicing himself open and ripping out his own heart as a sacrifice to the desiccated mummy lying in the sarcophagus. So, you know, heartache all around. The bloody corpse, of course, reanimates to become the Verses in our fantastic creature, in our fantastic feature, and Mil ruminates alone in the restaurant, wondering why he can't cast off his mask. Back at the temple, a random cop shows up, gets captured, and hypnotized by the mummy staff, as he explains that the dude who sacrificed himself did a good job of learning as much as possible so he could pass all that knowledge on to the mummy. So stop bitching that they aren't speaking Nahuatl, Karen. Scene change. Suspicious characters have been breaking into the blood banks around town, and only Mil Mascaras can help. The only clues the police have are footprints. Mil takes this information and retires to his Grecian statuary room, where he reviews the situation with his supercomputer. He discovers that the scene of the next heist by brilliantly deducing that of the 7 blood banks in town, 6 have been robbed. Now which one could be next? He immediately alerts the police, who are stunned at his detective work. They assemble a collection of their best men to handle the blood bank assignment, but uh-oh, one of them is our hypnotized policeman from the temple. Meanwhile, Mil checks his voicemail and discovers a message from the professor who wants to show him his latest work. Mil visits, and they discuss their various projects. The professor is pursuing advanced robotic techniques currently, while Mil has been writing music and continuing his research into observer-centric physics. Natch. The professor shows Mil his robot, which uses bipedal locomotion, most impressive, and his hot daughter, Maria.
Ew.
True.
Mil arrives late to the blood bank stakeout that night after a wrestling match where he tags team with Santo himself to find it almost deserted. There's only the mesmerized man from the temple left, who explains that all the others figured that he'd forgot and left. Mil isn't fooled, and he discovers the robbers and quickly dispatches them, until the hypnotized cop saps him from behind in an obvious cheap shot. Mil comes to tied up to a chair, but our cloudy-headed cop gets too close to Mil, and Mil kicks him, and the mighty blow finally clears the cop's head. Distraught, he tries to untie Mil, but they hear someone coming, so the cop runs away, apparently so far away that he leaves the movie entirely. The approaching guy turns out to just be a weirdo with a snake that Mil quickly dispatches, and then he hears the robber's van revving up, so he runs outside, only to have the driver speed directly at him. So, of course, Mil leaps through the windshield and tackles the driver out the back door of the van. I'm not going to lie, I cheered when that happened and watched it several times. Back at the professor's, Maria had a bad dream about Mil, and the professor has one of the least paternal talks of all time with Maria about how she has feelings for Mil, naturally, and how she'd be lucky to have him, but don't get her hopes up. Meanwhile, Mil's interrogating his prisoner from the blood bank because, as private citizen, he has more latitude than the cops, which you would think would include not handing off interrogations to a private citizen, but hey, I'm the lawyer. Mil's interrogation is mostly just glaring at the guy and massaging his knuckles, but it works, naturally. Mil gets the deets and purposefully allows the prisoner to escape, but not before attaching a transmitter to his clothes. Mil, the professor, and the chief follow the transmitter to an Aztec temple where they run into the mummy, and the mummy explains that Mil is descended from the man who defeated the Aztec mummy the first time before he was an actual mummy. And as he died, he cursed Mil Mascara's ancestor to forever wear a mask to separate him from his people. That showed him. Mil resists the mummy's hypnotic staff and beats up all the minions, allowing him to escape once more. Afterwards, Mil flies to Washington, D.C. to brief the president, of course, on the situation, and the mummy takes advantage of his absence to reveal his big plan to his followers. He's going to ensure that Mil loses the big championship match taking place that night, so he's So he's dispirited, and then the mummy will raise an army of the undead, and Mill will be too demoralized to resist him. So the match takes a turn for the ridiculous as a shape-shifting demon seduces Mill's opponent, the Magister, and then takes his place. But this is Mill Mascaras. He kicks the demon's ass. After the match, Mill heads to the professor's, where we find out the Mill is not constantly changing his mask and clothes as I thought. Apparently, it changes its appearance normally through a polycyclic reaction that takes place precisely 1,000 times. A Mill Mascaras, eh? Plus, we also learn that Maria has a birthmark on her back, the same shape as the mummy symbol, and there's a legend that the mummy will take a bride that bears the ancient mark. Take a bride that bears the ancient mark on her back. But the legend also speaks of a hero that will rise to combat the mummy. Mill Mascaras, of course. After some misadventures at a photo shoot with blonde vampire twins and magic mushrooms, Maria is, of course, kidnapped by the mummy. Mill goes alone to the old monastery where he has a gut feeling that that's where they're hiding out, and of course they are. Mill's beat up, and right before the mummy cuts him open to feast upon his own blood, the professor shows up with his robot, kicks some undead ass. And as the robot fights the undead horde, Mill breaks his chains with his bare hands, but the robot malfunctions and Mill's left to fight on his own. When all looks lost, the chief shows up with a whole gaggle of Lucador power who tear into the forces of darkness with gusto. While the Lucadors take care of the mummy's army, Mill takes on the mummy. There's a fierce battle where they throw each other against walls over and over until Mill pummels the mummy against a pillar of the temple, caving his head in. Word is then sent along to the President of the United States. Mill Mascaras is victorious.
You went over by 14 seconds.
Yeah, that's well within the allotted amount.
Bum, bum, bum.
Well done, Troy. That was highly entertaining.
Thank you.
You did not disappoint.
I wanted to see you do weird stuff, so I'm disappointed.
Oh, this movie was weird enough. I don't think it needs any help.
Oh, I don't like being the only person who had to undergo a penalty.
Well, we just started the penalties. Don't worry. I'm sure it will come for everyone.
It was the first of many, I'm certain. So let's go grab our first beer, folks. And we will be right back.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Ah. That sounds like a beer. I'm going to do the same thing. Ah. Ah. All right, gang. This is from Sierra Nevada out in the California region. Is this California? Or is this like Oregon?
Isn't it from Nevada? Come on.
It's not from Nevada.
Chico, California says it right on the can.
California.
And,
okay.
And real, California. Mills River, North Carolina.
Ah, oh, right in the balls.
Oh my God, I almost just spit beer everywhere.
What happened?
I missed it.
A cat jumped on his lap.
Ah.
It scratched me. That little fucking ass bag just jumped right on me and clawed the shit out of me.
So what are we drinking?
This is Ultra Vase.
Again?
Or Ultra Vase.
Again?
Again, exactly. Fuck you. It's like Pete and Repeat were sitting on a boat. Fuck you, Dave.
Ooh, it smells citrusy.
Ultra Vase means again, sort of. Once again, whatever
it means again.
In Spanish language. Yes. The details for this one, according to the website, we combine the classic flavors of lime and blue agave nectar in a tart gose-style beer for the ultimate answer to the heavy heat of the day. The bright lime flavor helps wake up the palate, while the mild sweetness of the agave rounds out the tangy zip of the citrus fruit. Light and refreshing, this all-new Ultra Vase will have you calling for another round. That is the description on the website. Alcohol by volume, ABV, 4.9. IBUs are 5. Have a shot, folks. This is Gose style, so it's going to be sort of sour, but maybe not. It will be refreshing. It is a patio beer. It is at 4.9. It is a drinking beer, so you can have a lot of these on a hot summer day on the patio.
But always drink responsibly.
Yeah, I wouldn't call this a sour. I would say it's tart, but you can really taste that sweet that comes from agave in it as well.
I thoroughly enjoy this beer. This is fantastic. Mm. It's like it has properties of a margarita.
I was without just being thinking that.
Without being heavy sugar, like a lot of restaurant margaritas. No offense to any of the restaurants out there, trust me.
Some
but
offense.
A lot of the restaurant margaritas, like, but those always had a heavily sugared sour mix that they would mix with the triple sec and tequila, and it always gave me an upset tummy. Or maybe it was just me drinking too many of them. I don't know.
I only had six, Ma.
Right, right.
I can't drink tequila. It makes me fucked up. Like, no, it's not the tequila. It's that you drank 11 shots of it. Now, I know what you're talking about as far as the margarita stuff goes. Mm-hmm. Like, it has all the elements of a margarita without being one. Like, I don't know. It's like it's got a very distinct lime flavor.
Yes.
It's, that sweetness, mm-hmm. that agave sweetness that you were talking about, Kathleen.
Mm-hmm.
It's delightful. Yeah. This is definitely a super refreshing beer for the patio. This is marvelous.
Yeah. I like on the can that it says that Sierra Nevada is family owned, operated, and argued over. That makes me laugh. I like this a lot.
Sierra Nevada, it's a pretty big brewery. It's not as mm-hmm. big as Sam Adams, but it's one of the large craft breweries out there. So it's easy to find. Most places, or should be. I'm thoroughly impressed how good this is. This is very, Dave, you said it has a lot of lime to it, but it also has that agave to it that leans Kathleen's towards a margarita yes. flavor. Or mm-hmm. whoever I'm talking to. I don't know. Who are you people?
I passed by, or pretty close by, the Sierra Nevada Brewery in Mills River. Well, technically, I was going through Asheville, North Carolina, and as we're going, we saw signs for the Sierra Nevada Brewery. I'm like, oh, wait a minute, I thought that was in California. And it just, I guess it's also in Nashville. That was a really boring story.
Well, I find that fascinating that I still like that Sierra Nevada feels like they're a California brewery, but they have several breweries across the United States to get their products to the consumers in an easier manner, much like Sam Adams, Boston Beer Company. I should say Guinness is a better representation of... It's not unusual for a large brewery to have multiple facilities. BrewDog is another one. They just opened up a facility here in Columbus two, 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So BrewDog from Scotland is now brewing in the United States right outside of Columbus, Ohio. You know, frankly, Budweiser's in Columbus. We've got a really good water source here in central Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
Well, having facilities in different places allows you to create a consistency because you don't have to worry about the transportation factor coming for your product.
Mm-hmm. The last thing you want is a bunch of kegs sitting on a boat coming across the
right.
ocean.
Right. But it would be interesting to do the Pepsi challenge with a Sierra Nevada from Asheville and then a Sierra Nevada from like California mm-hmm. to see if there's any discernible difference.
Any real difference? This is very refreshing. I mm-hmm. would recommend this for any patio person yeah. needing a beverage.
Patio person? We are the patio people.
Running out of adjectives.
Like, say, after you finish mowing the lawn.
There's no escaping
oh,
that.
Oh, indeed.
Unlike a lot of other beers that you would associate with this kind of flavor, this beer does not get gross as it gets warm. It's still nice.
I was thinking that same thing.
Yeah, for a low alcohol beer, there's a lot of flavor in this thing. So yeah, it's nice. It just gets a little limier.
Yeah.
Don't we all?
It totally does remind me of a margarita though, strongly. It's really good. I'm really a fan of this too.
So did anybody count how many costume changes Mil Máscaras had?
I did.
Oh, you did? Oh, damn it. I lost count after 5.
No, hold on. Wait, I wrote it down.
I lost track after 13. Kathleen, what did you have for a final total of costume changes?
The first, because he starts out at the candlelight dinner, and then mm-hmm. he, the next time you see him, he's sitting like a sad puppy beside a river, and he's in a completely different outfit. But it's supposed to be another day, so it's like, okay, that, you know.
I change shirts every day.
People change clothes, right? I mean, you know, prior to what we're dealing with right now.
I don't know. And, I am on my fourth day on this underwear, and no one has said a thing.
Well, you also aren't leaving the house, so, you know, but.
That is not true. That's disgusting. I wouldn't do that.
You just don't wear underwear.
There were three or four of them happened before I was like, oh my God, he's changing his mask every freaking scene. So then I went back and like started counting them. So every time I noticed he changed from one mask to another, I wrote it down. But toward the end, I started noticing like seeing repeats, like the leopard print one I saw a few times, but I was not going to watch it again to go back and like get an accurate count because I don't care that much. But so he changed masks 31 times over the course of the movie. Now, again, I think that the leopard one might have been in there like more than once, or one of the black and white ones might have been in there more than once. But
well,
in a row?
And let's
sorry.
I mean, kind of. Time is very not.
Don't change any masks down on the way to the parking lot.
Well, yeah. I mean, there was one, like when he goes to, and I understand he was about to do his big wrestling thing, so it makes sense. But he's wearing a mask in a scene that, and says, I have to go wrestle the magistrate or whatever that guy's name was. He has a different mask on as he's walking in. Then he has a different one on when he's doing the actual wrestling. Then he has a different one on as soon as the thing is over. And then he has a different one on when he's talking to the professor, who I just kept calling PhD the whole time. Right. That was my nickname for him in my notes when he's talking to PhD. So in 20 minutes of movie time, because the wrestling matches took way too long, but 5 minutes worth of storyline, he changed his mask five times. So
the most notable for me was when he came. So after they'd captured the guys at the blood bank and they were going to interrogate the prisoner, he's in like a yellow mask and a yellow cape. And they say, you should interrogate him because police have to follow certain rules, but you have a lot more discretion. So then he goes in to interrogate him. And he's in like a black mask with like red trim and staring at the dude. And then he comes back out after the interrogation, back in the yellow and green. It's like, so did you have like an interrogation mask that you put on and then you change back into your street clothes or?
Well, and then we learn at some point from the PhD that the mask changes by itself.
Yes, there's only one mask.
Oh, I missed that. And it's just being, it's.
Yes, when they showed the x-rays of his head and how the mask is like perfectly suited to the shape of his skull, and because of what it's made of keeps the hypno waves from penetrating his brain or whatever, that it also can do this thing and it will change 1,000 times. And I was like, okay, it'll change 1,000 times, so what happens after 1,000? Like, does he get to take it off now that he's fulfilled his destiny and
no
he
it's
got
like,
this?
It's like it's like Y2K, just cycles back to zero.
I guess. Yeah, I have no idea.
It changes its appearance through polycyclic reaction, of course.
Which I don't think
pick up on that.
I don't think that's a thing. Well, because it was like the ninth moment of exposition. Like, I know that a lot of times in this podcast I complain that there's no freaking story to follow. There's so much story in this movie, and they took like so many times to tell the whole story. Like, we did not need to know why the mummy could speak a language everybody else could understand twice. We didn't need that explained to us twice. Like, I was like, catch up, buddy, who cares? We already know why. So, and then when he sat down to meet with the president and the joint chiefs and started to tell them the whole plot of the movie, I was like, oh my God, I don't want to hear the whole plot of the movie again.
Apparently that special material that keeps his hypno waves from going into to be able to control Emil Mascaras is just sequins, because that seems to be the thing that is consistent with all of his masks, is they're just covered with sequins. So
for an ancient mask, it does look very sequined. I didn't think they had sequins in like ancient Aztec times, but the Aztecs were very advanced, so it's possible.
That's true. That's very true.
Speaking of
one of those outfits was super sequined. I mean,
oh yeah,
the one where he first shows up at the police station, like, and it was like
backup dancer sequence.
It looked like the scales of like the shining scales of a coiled snake. It was
right.
It was,
yes. Like, just gets a I had it listed as being in rainbow glitz for that one, but once I, that was the point where I realized he was going to change masks constantly, so I stopped writing down descriptions and just started keeping track of how many times they changed.
But speaking of ancient Aztecs, like I looked up Mil Máscaras, and he's old. Like, when this was filmed, he was, he was probably in his mid-60s.
Oh, easily. Yeah. He was like Hulk Hogan in the late 90s.
Yeah, I was looking to see if he was like El Santo, where there's like a replacement for the original Santo. But no, it's just him. Like, he's been doing this since the 70s or 60s.
There's only ever been one Santo, Dave.
Yeah. Well, there's the son of Santo.
There is a son of Santo. Yeah.
Who was in this movie.
Yeah. They just called him Santo.
Oh, man.
I love, let's wrap this up, Santo. I'm late for 10 o'clock stakeout. That's one of my favorite lines.
Right.
Oh, my God. The lines during this movie.
During a wrestling match, it's like, hey, I got to go to a police stakeout. Let's wrap this match up. It's amazing.
Which gave Santo permission to open the whoop-ass.
Well, you know what? By that time, he'd already kind of established himself as like this wrestler, artist, antiquities collector, musician, physicist.
Oh, my God. I know. He's like the most renaissance man ever.
It's awesome.
And a wrestler.
There wasn't a renaissance he wasn't a part of.
Yeah. Absolutely.
He encompassed all of the renaissance.
Yes.
You know what? That is the moment where I'm like, you know what? I kind of wish I was more into this luchador stuff, because this character is freaking amazing. Like, he's all that stuff and a goodwill ambassador. And like, he can just waltz into like the higher staff levels of the White House. Talk to the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Like,
oh, I know.
And I'm like, yeah,
America will put
something.
The army under Mil Máscaras because he came in and said there was something that needed to be done. They're like, our army is at your disposal, but only for 48 hours.
They didn't all feel that way, because the first guy was like, oh, I don't like this foreign national. And I was like, oh, God. Every time we got to have that guy in the movie. Like, what an asshole.
That guy's always there, Kathleen.
Though, I laughed so hard when the president was like, you should have called us. And he was like, well, with all due respect, sir, I don't have your number. This movie was written by a 14-year-old. It's ridiculous.
It was actually written by the Aztec mummy.
Oh, yes.
Right.
No, literally. Like, the actor who played the Aztec mummy, Jeffrey Ullman, he wrote the movie, and he was the Aztec mummy.
Yeah,
apparently a super fan, because, I mean, watching this movie, I kind of gathered that, like, it wasn't, I mean, it was a little tongue-in-cheek, but it was also, like, he really loves this lucha culture.
It was in the style of a lucha film.
Yeah.
Which always had a little tongue-in-cheek going on. I mean, the lucha films never took themselves very seriously. Maybe that's the wrong thing to say. They embraced the ridiculousness of themselves and just rolled with the punches and had a good old time with it. This could have been a movie in the 60s with Blue Demon and Santo, and it could have been all of them. This felt like it was straight out of the 60s.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I thought a few times, this movie, I mean, if it had been made in the 60s, there could have been a Mil Máscaras or a lucha crossover with, like, the Adam West Batman.
Yes, all it was missing was the spinning screen pow, flash, bang.
Oh.
And that would have
to
been
go
amazing.
Back in time and get that done. Oh, Dave, I now have a new lot in life.
That's your new
this
purpose?
This needs to happen. It is my new purpose to invent a time machine and get Adam West and Mil Máscaras and El Santo to do a stupid movie with shark repellent.
It'd be amazing.
Some days you just can't get rid of a bomb.
Right. Right.
No, but this movie was definitely made with a real love for lucha films, and it's pretty obvious. It made me wish that I knew more about it, because as bad as it was, and this movie's really bad.
Oh, it's so bad.
Yeah, I couldn't find myself to dislike it. I kind of kept liking it. Like, I kept watching it. I'm like, oh, I wonder what happens next. Like, I dug in. Like, I leaned into it.
As soon as all those luchadors show up at the end and they're like
oh my
marching
gosh.
Towards the bunker or the Aztec temple,
It's like, I really wish that I could feel the weight of this when they all show up, you know?
I know. I was watching it downstairs today, and the thought flit across my head, Avengers Assemble! When they all came, like, marching over the thing. Yeah.
And exactly. 10 years before Avengers Assemble.
Right.
Yeah, this is true. But it was before Iron Man even got caught in the desert.
Right. Right.
But there was a group of people. There was probably a huge group of people that when that scene happened and all those luchadors started walking up about ready to kick ass, everybody was like, screaming and crying,
Out of their chairs and started screaming.
Absolutely.
And there were luchadors and luchadoras.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And there were at least two women. We've seen a couple of these movies, and we don't see a lot of female actors outside of either antagonists or...
love interest.
Damsels in distress.
Right.
And this one had a couple of kick-ass gals at the very end.
Yeah.
I'm down with seeing some more of that. That was a good time. If anything could have been longer, the fight at the end could have been longer with all of the famous luchadors and luchadoras coming in. That could have been a lot of fun to just soak in the personalities fighting monsters. That would have been a whole lot of fun.
Yeah, it would have been better if they would have had Mel outside fighting the Aztec zombie dude while all the rest of them are around him fighting the little Jawa zombies that they had that they were all fighting. Because if you add his fight scene in with their fight scene, it's the right length, but you didn't get enough of either one. So if they'd all been out fighting on the same platform, then it would have been fine. I think my biggest complaint about this movie, because Dave, I felt a lot the same way, like I just kept laughing about like, where is this story going and what are they doing and what is happening? But I'm sorry, but the PhD nerd dude and his creepy ass daughter and her creepy ass lines and her creepy ass kind of crush that still also felt very inappropriate for Mill were just, and I know that it was a case of seriously bad acting on her part. Because, like, the first time she comes in, she's acting like she's way younger than she is. Daddy, why didn't you tell me? And I was like,
she looked like she was about 30. How old was she supposed to be?
Right. That's the thing. I don't know. She looked like she was probably late 20s, early 30s. But I'm thinking she was maybe supposed to be early 20s.
Like 20.
But she first comes in acting like she's 12. And then there are other times where, like, I don't know. And then the
Daddy,
conversation.
I can't fight my barrettes. I was going to go outside and play hopscotch.
Right. She's like, aren't we going to have him over for tea? I would love to see him fight in the ring. And I was just like, ugh, God, you're so gross. And then the dad has that really creepy conversation with her when he's like, you really like him, don't you? And she's like, are my emotions that transparent? And it's like, oh, I'm vomiting over here. And he's like, yeah. And then basically, and I'm going to completely paraphrase, but he's basically like, yeah, he's hot. I understand why you'd want to do him. And I'm like, no, dad has that conversation with his kid. Like, ugh.
You're a grown woman now, and many women find Mil Mascaras desirable. It's just that I don't want to see you get hurt.
Ugh, it's awful.
You don't think Mil Mascaras could have the same feelings about me?
Oh, honey.
Keep going, Troy. No. These are direct quotes from the movie.
Oh, yeah, I wrote it all down.
Oh, they are.
Well, I honestly don't know what goes on behind that mask. He has the mind.
A mustache
of
does.
He has the mind of a scientist, the soul of an artist, the body of a great athlete.
Right.
And yet,
see, like
there's something more to him. Something that separates him from normal men.
Right.
Is it the mask he never takes off?
I was like, this is so over the
it's
top.
It's like the dad also has the hots for him. Like, I don't know. It was just...
It's Mil Mascaras. Like, every man wants him.
Yeah.
No, wait.
No.
Is that the way it goes?
No, it's supposed to be him.
Wants
to, wants
be, to
be
him.
Yes.
Dave.
Every woman wants
you know
him.
What?
Every man wants to be him.
This guy wants him. That's all there is to it.
I like your confidence, Dave. I want him.
I just say I want him.
Well,
Dave, I just don't want you to get hurt.
Are my feelings that transparent?
God, she's so gross. And the dad is super gross too. Like, that's the thing is, like, that's who they were in my notes. They were PhD and Creepy Maria. Like, every time they came on stage, on screen, I was like, Creepy Maria. Ugh.
It was so, she was so creeped out by her that she actually wrote Creepy instead of just Maria. It would have been so much easier to just write Maria, but like, Creepy was just apparent. Like, okay, so the other thing that I've noticed over and over was, there's the Wilhelm scream, but then there's also like,
I know what you're talking about. It's that,
like, the scream that comes from the bottom of the guts, and then like, I've heard it in several movies, and like when the demon set fire, it's like,
yes, they played it that at least scream. Twice.
They use it at least twice. I don't know what that one's called, but like it was so apparent and so upfront in this movie.
I've been looking for that scream for a while now. I want to know. I want to find it just so I can listen to it over and over.
Yeah.
That's not true at all. I just made that up.
I think they used it in Heavy Metal, the animated movie from the 80s, Heavy Metal.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah.
That seems to be where I associate it most. I couldn't even tell you where in that movie it is, but I'm almost sure it's in it.
I guess I'm going to have to watch Heavy Metal.
Oh, have you ever watched it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's super weird.
God, I fucking love that movie.
It's super bizarre. And I mean, we could talk about Heavy Metal for a while, but I do remember thinking when I watched it as an adult, finally.
Let's not.
Thinking to myself, like, I have not done nearly enough drugs to appreciate this right now.
Right.
Speaking of drugs, anybody want more beer?
Yes.
I would like another beer. That's a great segue, Dave. You beat me to it. Let's go get our second beer.
That's because you're terrible at segues, Pete.
I am awful, and I embrace my awfulness.
They're very difficult to keep upright and balanced when you're zooming around, so.
When I'm zooming around? Like, just my brain in general?
On a segue, yeah.
I got it, Kathleen.
Sorry.
Time for another beer.
I was channeling my inner Troy Carlson.
Who wants an orange whip? Orange whip? Orange whip? Three orange whips.
Okay, our second beer from New Holland Brewing in Michigan, in Holland, Michigan?
I gotta look this up.
Let me try this again. Yeah, Holland, Michigan. Yeah. I thought so.
I feel like we've had that conversation before.
I'm dumb. Which is no surprise to anyone listening to this.
Oh my God, I'm gonna end up spitting beer out of...
This beer is called Cerveza con Limón, which is lime beer in English. Mexican style lager with lime, 4.8% ABV. Cerveza con Limón celebrates the long, joyful days of summer when the afternoon slowly fades into evening and the fellowship carries on till morning. Cold pressed oil from Persian limes and lemons adds a refreshing citrus quality to this lager that will keep your thirst quenched all summer long. Cheers. Salud.
What's limón in Spanish? Is it crap?
Lemon.
I'm not digging the cerveza con limón.
Fair enough. This is delicious, by the way. This is very very citrusy. Oh, Kathleen hates the hell out of this, huh?
Oh. It tastes like Pledge. Oh.
It tastes like Pledge smells. Sure.
Oh, it's the... And maybe it's because...
Maybe it's because we let ours get a little warmer.
No, well, that's a possibility. It's also a possibility that it's because I didn't have any water to, like... Oh!
Oh, hi.
Sorry, that was my daily alarm to remember to take attendance for the day, because we have to do it one day in the rears. So...
You have to take attendance in the rear? What?
I'm not even going to go there. So...
Okay.
Was that our first butt joke of the evening?
Did I beat Dave to a butt joke?
Wow, this is the longest we've gotten into it.
I've been refraining from doing too many butt jokes. I feel like I've been getting tiresome. but if the door's been cracked open, then I get to kick it down.
If it's been cracked open.
Oh, God. I feel like I need to just go, ew, right now, just to, like, blanket.
We're
going to
get you that t-shirt, by the way. That ew t-shirt is all you, baby.
I'll have to add my own letters to add in Troy and Pete to it.
Right.
Oh, yeah. That's obviously some quote from something, but I don't know what.
Just order it. We'll pay for it.
I'd put some money
in. It'll come out of the Good Beer, Bad Movie Night treasury.
Right, right. All the money that we make off of this podcast.
Right. No, this beer, like you said, that it is, it's a pressed lemon oil, and that is what I taste, is lemon oils, not like the pulp ground up or like the juice squeeze. It's that oils taste. And as a connoisseur of essential oils, I know exactly what I'm talking about, because I have had many drinks where I put the essential oils in and drink them when I'm like not feeling well or whatever. So that's a big no thank you for this.
I definitely got a really heavy hit of Murphy's oil soap.
Yeah. That's why I said it tastes like Pledge.
Yeah. I've been like cleaning wood. All right, let me rephrase that.
You've been polishing wood?
I've been touching penis. No,
Oh, God, here we go. You started it, and now...
The door is cracked open. You started it. There's no...
I did not.
There's no keeping it in.
Keeping it in. No, does that work? No, it doesn't work. No, I've been using Murphy's oil soap to clean... It
comes out little spurts when you walk.
Ew. Look, see, look. You made Dave say ew. What does that say?
Like, I heard it, but just like... If I could see your words written on paper, like the word spurt, which is like
ew,
bold. Like,
that might have to go on the icky word wall.
Spurt. Spurt. Along with panties and moist. Yeah, okay.
Oh, moist. That's not a word that bothers me.
I've heard a lot of people complain about the word panties.
Yes. I think it's more the Cleveland nasal A, panties, that people have a problem with than the actual word.
Yeah, that's a Great Lakes thing. Like, if you listen to people from, like, upstate New York.
The Great Lakes pinched A, yeah. Michigan as well.
To way up there, it's like, panties. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Oh, my God, my moist panties.
Ew. Okay.
Right. Well done, Troy.
That
Yay.
Even got me.
Let's go back to the beer. Let's talk about this beer that I don't think tastes good.
I was saying something about Murphy's oil soap, but anyway. Oh, did you give an ABV statement or an IBU statement?
ABV is 4.8, so I done you guys good. We have two beers under 5% instead of three beers over 10%.
Yeah, like Dave tried to kill us a couple months ago.
Dave tried to kill us last month.
Or...
No, that is actually, completely right. I was, in fact, trying to kill all of us.
Son, I knew it.
It was my birthday. I get to kill who I want.
That's right.
It's like the Purge.
Yeah, you know what? I'm bouncing back and forth as to whether or not I like it. I wasn't expecting this, especially after the Sierra Nevada, because the Sierra Nevada is very distinctly lime, and this is, they took a different direction.
This is candy lemon. Where it's not real tart, but it tastes like a lemon still.
I know where you're going with that.
I'm not describing this well.
Like no, you
lemon
actually
drops
are.
Or lemon heads or...
Lemon head is a good one.
No one's going to jump on that lemon head.
Without, yeah. Well, like a fresh lemon head, not when you get down into the lemon head.
Ew.
Right?
Ugh, God.
but when you get out... Like, lemon heads can get good and sour toward the center.
How is that a double entendre?
Oh, my God.
But when you first pop it in your mouth, it's nice and sweet and lemony.
Sometimes it surprises even me that I wish we were just talking about the movie.
Are you talking about balls?
I don't know what I'm talking about.
Oh, my God.
Come up with your own thing, Dave.
No, I'm just trying to figure out what you're talking about. Oh, is it all up for interpretation? Then you are, in fact, talking about balls.
Sure. Sometimes when I get to the middle of the balls, they're more salty.
Oh, God.
Or, sour.
Ew.
Lemony.
God.
Whatever.
Shh. Stop talking, Troy Carlson.
You have no idea how many times I hear that a day.
I'm going to have to rubber band the sink sprayer again.
Ew, Troy Carlson and Honey from Donna, I think,
honey.
Are things that just happen consistently in your household.
Yes, yeah. I know. I got yelled at by somebody at work because my nickname for Troy is Troy Carlson. Like, it's not like sweetheart or honey or anything like that. Carlson. I'm like, they're like, what do you call your husband? I was like, Troy Carlson.
Yeah, traditionally like, speaking, aren't nicknames supposed to be like diminutive? Like they're supposed to be a shortening or like, you know, a term of endearment that's less difficult to say than the actual name?
Supposedly, yes, but... You know,
Troy
I don't
Carlson.
Know. He's just Trey Carlson. It's not like his name is, like, you know, super long.
Jawaharlal Nehru.
Right. What?
He was the first prime minister of India. Never mind. You know what? Nobody cares. I have no friends.
Oh, my goodness. Ugh. So this movie was very interesting in... Where was it filmed?
I was wondering that, too.
That is a very good question. There was a... Okay, so I looked up... I tried to do so much research on this thing, and there's just nothing out there except for one website. It was like the official website of this movie. That's where I found the sequel and then...
The novelization.
And, right. Where was I going with this? Oh, shit.
I had a point.
I did. Dang it.
Something about filming
you
locations?
You didn't find anything about it because we were talking about filming locations. Did you find out how much it cost?
Yes, filming locations. So I was looking at the website that was promoting, like, the official Mil Máscaras versus Aztec Mummy website. And there is some sort of connection to the University of Missouri.
That's weird. Okay. Yeah, right.
There was a list of things, like, about the movie. And you could click on the link to about the movie, and it would give you these trailers to the other films and to the people that starred in it. And then the MU engineering department, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, what the hell is this? And I clicked on it, and it goes straight to the University of Missouri, their engineering department. So I'm like,
Truman.
But where was it filmed? It could have been Missouri. I don't know.
Well, I was interested in the fact that, because, like, in looking at the Santo movies, they're Mexican-made films. They are of,
certain.
You know, the Hollywood, whatever the Hollywood of Mexico is, wherever their film production is, like, they are Mexican-made films. And most everybody in the movies are Mexican, Spanish-speaking people. And so I was very surprised that the police chief was African-American. I was like, what? Okay. I mean, I'm down for diversity. That's fine. I was just, it just didn't feel like there were a lot of Mexican people in this film versus the way a Santo movie is, where it was the entire cast.
Yes.
I don't know that this movie is a production of the Mexican filmmaking industry.
In fact,
it comes from somewhere else. And especially when, like, a lot of the names in the credits, like, one of the directors is Andrew Quint. Like, I was like,
I saw that. Yeah.
You did. I know you texted me about it.
But you are you are correct.
Did I?
This is actually, it's an American production.
Okay.
So you're not losing your mind or anything. Like, it was, I believe, the first American production of a Lucha film.
That doesn't surprise me.
And it was released in the United States and in Mexico. And I did some research, and I couldn't find a whole lot of data on how well it did. But, I mean, it was pretty well received by everybody who saw it. I just suspect that not a whole lot of people saw it in the United States.
The people that reviewed it gave it favorable reviews. Like, they knew what they were getting into. It wasn't Siskel and Ebert going in like, this movie sucks ass, because the movie sucks ass. But people going into it were like, I'm excited to see a luchador film.
Right.
Oh, this is a good luchador film. Okay. And if you keep it within the context, I think you will enjoy it.
Yeah. And which is kind of what inspired me to think, like, I wish I knew more about lucha films. Because if you're a huge fan of, let's say, I don't know, Godzilla movies, and then you watched a romantic...
I don't know what you're talking about, Dave.
Right, of course you don't. But then you were to watch... and if that's what you consider a good movie, I mean, if that's your wheelhouse, and then you go and watch, let's say, a romantic comedy, you're like, this romantic comedy is a terrible Godzilla movie. Like, well, yes, of course it is, because it's a romantic comedy.
Of course it is.
I didn't see Godzilla once. Like, you're not supposed to.
Right. No, no one's running from a giant thing.
Right. So by that metric, as far as lucha movies go, this was a very good lucha movie.
It felt like one.
It was better than Santo versus the Blob.
Everything almost is better than Santo versus the Blob.
Oh, man, that was a bad movie.
Yeah, I feel like you had to be a big fan of lucha movies or Santo to like that one. And none of us are.
No. I mean, I'm sure Santo's a great guy, but that Blob was ridiculous.
You mean that sheet with six guys under it?
That carpet.
Yes, that weird rubber
carpet.
Sheet that was so strange. Though, speaking of film production, the Aztec zombie makeup that the guy had once he was, like, reanimated was pretty cool.
Yeah, that was all right. It was a nice mask. I mean, the face didn't move a lot when he spoke,
yeah.
But whatever.
Yeah.
It was still kind of gory and gross.
Strangely, Mil Mascaras is... when he spoke, they obviously dubbed all his words.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
He's the only non-English speaker.
I guess so. But it just made me really want to know what he actually sounds like.
Oh, that's a good question. We could go back to the old Luchador films. That's not a problem. Because a lot of the old Luchador films are subtitled only, and we can hear his actual voice. I don't know.
I kept noticing how...
You know what? I was really surprised. When we've seen him in Lucha films in the past, I thought he was a giant comparatively to Santo and Blue Demon, especially. But he was far from the tallest person in this film. And many of the women were just as tall as he was.
Yeah.
So maybe El Santo and Blue Demon are even shorter.
Yeah.
I mean,
Mil Mascara is 5'11". I mean, he's not a short man. 5'11 is generally tall.
Yeah.
Average, yes.
I mean, if you take the average American male, 5'11 is tall. Average American male is, I think, between 5'7 and 5'10.
Yep.
Yeah, comparatively. I don't know what the average Mexican male's height is, but I guess it's not 5'11".
But that was the whole, he was less than average to his male counterparts in this film, I thought. Especially the professor, that guy was tall. That guy was tall, tall.
So was his ponytail.
Yeah. Speaking of the PhD, did you notice that he had a tendency to change bow ties a lot as well?
No.
As masks?
Yeah,
I started to notice that toward the end. Like, I was like, oh my, he's taking as many, like, he's switching bow ties. Not quite as often as the mask, but more than necessary. Mm-hmm. One of my biggest complaints with this movie, besides the creepy Maria and her creepy relationship with everybody she comes in contact with, is the sense of time. He goes to meet with the Americans and they tell him he has 48 hours to take care of this Aztec thing before we're going to have to take care of it ourselves because, you know, Americans are assholes. But then, like, half the movie takes place after that. And I'm like, after about 15 minutes, I was like, 48 hours has got to be up by now. Like, we've definitely lived multiple different days at this point. Like, what is happening? And it's hard to keep track of time. Because a lot of times when you're watching a film, one way that you keep track of time is literally outfit changes. And this guy changes outfits time he changes scenes. And so it's like, okay, wait, how many days have we lived in this? I thought the movie had ended. Like, we beat the Aztec guy. We had conquered all the zombie Jawas. There was the big celebration. Like, I was like, okay, we're good. And then there's this scene where they're like, we haven't heard from him yet. We may have to step in. I was like, oh my God, how much longer of this movie is there? It's like, oh. But then they're like, oh, we got the call. I was like, oh, thank God. It's like,
thank
completely
God
stupid.
Thank God for
Well, and it's like completely stupid, pointless, like, end to the movie. It was totally unnecessary.
The whole interaction with the U.S. government was pointless and weird.
Yes.
But so I kind of loved it because it's like everybody stops for Mil Mascaras, you know? Wow.
Hey, did anybody see PJ Souls in this movie?
Yes, she was the announcer at the wrestling match with
the guy. Was she really?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't even know who she is, but they literally said her name. They were like, and our announcers today
totally
are PJ Souls and blah, 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 whoever that other guy was. I was like, I think these are supposed to be important people, but I don't know who they are.
PJ Souls is very important.
Okay. Well, who is she?
She was in Halloween. She was
she Jamie Lee Curtis's friend?
Yes.
Okay.
No.
Yes. She was Jamie Lee Curtis's friend, and she was one of the people that was killed in the house that Jamie Lee Curtis was in.
Sorry, I'm wrong. I was thinking of Carrie.
Oh,
not Carrie.
She was also
Carrie.
Carrie
doesn't have any friends.
No.
Not Carrie. But PJ Souls was in Carrie also, and she was in Stripes.
She was in Stripes.
And I met her two summers ago at Horror Hound in Cincinnati. She was a delight.
Oh, look at Pete.
She was.
With the connections.
I know. My niece wanted to meet her. I'm like, okay, let's meet her. And we were like maybe like three or four in line. And when it got to be my niece Mary's turn, she got up there and I was going to take a picture of them. And PJ Souls was like, no, you come in too, honey. I'm like, no, I'll take the picture. She's like, no, I want you in the picture too. I'm like, oh, that's so sweet. So that was cool. And I just thought that was a very sweet thing to do. It wasn't just a, hey, come up here, take a picture of me, blah, blah, blah. So
give me your $20.
Right.
I wonder how many times fans ask her to say, like, do you like what you see from Halloween?
Right.
But speaking of Halloween, has anybody ever actually wondered why luchadors wear the masks?
It is a tradition. I don't know what the actual origin of the lucha mask is. Do you, Dave, know?
No, I don't know. I was truly asking because, like, American professional wrestlers, like not like Greco-Roman, but like, you know, wrestling.
Right.
Like cage matches and folding chairs and shit. They have their own personas, but they don't wear masks like Mexican wrestlers do. If anybody knew.
Not as a general thing. There have been American wrestlers with masks for sure. I wonder if they conceal their identities because they have another job or something. I don't know. Because they do it on the side. I'm not entirely sure.
If anybody knows that I'm a professional wrestler, they'll never take me seriously as a dental hygienist.
Right.
Oh, my.
Yeah. I really loved my orthodontist until I found out he was a luchador. I just don't see him the same way anymore. Although, I mean, there's like this real admiration for lucha. Like, they're all champions. Like, their characters anyway have like this impeccable character. They're all super smart. They have incredible like lairs. Like Mil Máscara in this movie, he apparently collected statuary because there was just like marble statues all over his place. They're all super smart. They're all really well educated. They're all very well respected by their communities and whatnot. Like, it just seems like
the luchadors are the superheroes of I don't want to say Mexico, but kind of, yeah. And the beauty of the luchador is they are a real person. Now, those people do have comic books named after them, and they have a bigger-than-life persona, but they've earned it in the ring, and they present it on the silver screen. Mm. So they are larger than life, and they are national treasures, and they're influential. Even more so than American wrestlers. And American wrestlers, you can say that they sort of do that too. They're kind of some of them, Hulk Hogan and a few others, have made films. And there have been some cartoons and maybe a comic here and there. But not like the Luchas have. There's more to them than just their ring persona.
Yeah, and I kind of get that. Like, I mean, really, truly, the only thing I know about lucha, luchadors, are like, they wear the masks. That's about it. A significance about Mil Máscara is that he's never taken his mask off. So he's undefeated.
Right. That's a big thing.
Oh, yes.
So thinking of the idea of luchas being superheroes, maybe that's part of where the mask comes from, where it's that dual identity.
Oh, sure.
You know, Clark Kent, glasses on, he's a nerd, glasses off, he's Superman. So it may have something tied into that kind of dual personality aspect.
That makes sense.
It allows you to have a persona in the ring and outside of the ring, a life of your own.
Right.
Because I believe Santo never took his mask off in public, except when he took his mask off in public and didn't tell anybody he was Santo.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I know that the actor who plays Mil Máscara, he's taking great pains to protect what he actually looks like, to protect his private life.
There is something called a mask match or something like that, an unmasking match, where the loser of the mask, of the match
has to take off
their mask off, and that not degrades them, but it knocks them down. It does degrade them. They're no longer a superhero of sorts. They're now humanized, and there's your face, and for everyone to see. Now, Diamond of the Rough, or whatever you want to call yourself, right? whatever. I don't know. There's lots of names that luchas go by. A lot of really crazy names, and they're a lot of fun to. Okay, for instance, wait, hold on. I have a game for you, Kathleen. we're gonna play a game here called Comic Book Superhero or Luchador.
I'm not gonna be very good at this.
That's okay. That's okay.
One of the diamond in the rough.
Very good at it. Right.
Or I'm sorry. Diamante and Bruto.
So I'm gonna say something like diamond in the rough, and you're gonna say comic book superhero.
Okay.
And I'm gonna say wrong. It's neither comic book superhero or luchador.
Like wrong.
No, that's
fuck
not
you.
Fair. Hopefully all of these are yes or no.
Aladdin. Duh.
But I.
Diamond in the rough.
And.
Okay.
And you have to guess, Kathleen, if they are a superhero or a luchador or luchadora. So, Kathleen, are you ready for the luchador or comic book hero?
As I ever am with anything that involves this podcast. Yes.
Okay, here we go. El Toro Negro.
Lucha.
Incorrect. Marvel character. El Diablo.
Comic book.
Correct. DC. Wildcat.
Comic book.
Correct. DC. Magic Girl.
Lucha.
Luchadora. Correct. Empress.
Lucha.
DC. DC Comics. El Flamir.
Lucha.
Luchadora. Correct. Lady Deathstrike.
Comic.
Comic. Correct. Marvel. Lady Shanai.
Comic.
Luchadora. Wrong. Goya Kong.
Oh, God. Comic.
Wrong. Luchadora. Luchadora. Blue Demon.
Lucha.
Both. Trick question. Both. Blue Beetle.
Rude. What's the next one?
Blue Beetle.
That's the name of Harry Dresden's car.
True. I give you credit for that one. Captain USA.
Comic.
Lucha, but also was a character played by Don DeLuise in Cannonball Run. Dr. X.
Comic. Dr. X is... No, wait. That's Professor X. Dr. X, I'm going to say, is Lucha.
Lucha, correct. Mr. X.
Comic.
Luchador. Professor X.
Comic.
Correct. Tigra.
Lucha.
Marvel Comics. Incorrect. Savage Dragon.
Comic.
Image Comics. Correct. American Dragon.
Lucha.
Luchador, correct. Mr. Mystery.
Comic.
Marvel, correct. Mysterio.
Comic.
Correct. Marvel. Rey Mysterio.
Brother of the first guy. I don't know. Lucha.
His cousin.
Lucha,
Jim
correct.
Mysterio.
Tarantula.
Comic.
Comics, correct. Spider Gwen.
Comic.
Correct. Spider Lady.
Lucha.
Lucha. Luchador, correct. Madam Spider.
Lucha.
Marvel comic character. Spider Baby.
Sounds like Peter Parker's been getting around. probably a comic.
Neither is movie starring Lon Chaney and Sid Haig.
Okay, Fishman. You said when we started this that the answers were going to be comic or lucha. You're changing the rules in your own damn game.
Fishman.
Comic.
Luchador. Aquaman.
Comic.
Okay, yes, comic. Mystique.
Comic.
Trick question is both. And Kathleen, that is our game for today.
Okay, you know what?
Ridiculous.
I think this is a little unfair. Okay, Professor X presumably has a PhD, which also would make him a Dr. X.
Oh, that's a good point, Dave. He's never referred to in the comics as Dr. X, though, is he?
That's right.
That's true.
And let's be fair, that would make him a Mr. X as well.
What is his PhD in, anyway?
I don't know. Nerd science? I don't know.
Nerd science?
You don't technically have to have a PhD to be a professor. You just have to teach at a higher learning institution.
Yeah. I'm having a hard time believing that he just got an undergraduate.
No, you have to have a master's degree.
Okay, so he gets a master's degree. He applies to like a community college or like a college or something like that, and then becomes adjunct Professor X, and then eventually becomes Professor X.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to look that shit up.
Thank you for playing, Kathleen.
You're welcome.
Your compliance.
That was actually fun, except you changed the rules. If you say from the beginning that it's supposed
game.
To be
I can change
she
the
does
rules,
not
this
like
answer,
to lose.
This answer. So, wow.
Oh, no, no. You totally won, Kathleen. I give you 100% you win.
I got more right than I expected to, though.
Yep.
Of no surprising, the fact that I'm married to Mr. Marvel, did I miss most of the DC answers.
Yeah.
If anybody's actually wondering, I did look it up. Professor X has PhDs in genetics, biophysics, psychology, and anthropology, and an MD in psychiatry. So apparently he just collected letters behind his name.
Thank God we got that cleared up.
MD, PhD, PsyD, CPA.
XMAN.
CPA. Yeah.
He's BA, that's for sure.
So BA. let's rate this. Let's rate this son of a gun. Dave, tell us, if you will, what this rating system is all about.
Okay.
you sound you to so go, no.
dejected every time you was like, oh,
fuck
do
you,
I got
to
do this
to.
Again?
You can't make me.
Okay, I'll do it, but only because I was gonna, not because you told me to. Me.
You.
Stupid.
I knew I could count on you guys. Okay. So we here at Good Beer Bad Movie Night have a unique rating system called the six-pack rating, where we rate a movie from 0 beers to 6 beers. 0 beers or 1 beer means you enjoyed the movie and you don't actually need any beer to tolerate it, I guess. A rating of 6 beers means you need to be completely inebriated in order to tolerate the movie. So let's start with Troy. How many beers do you require to enjoy this movie? Where the fuck is my pen? Hold on. Sorry. Never mind. I got it.
I think I just need 2 beers. I mean, like, it's not a 1 beer. It's there's some problems. I think Kathleen's right. The creepy
Maria.
Creepy Maria and her dad.
Creepy Maria.
The dad is creepier than Maria.
Reminds me of a West Side Story. Okay, sorry.
She's got a fresh face. I like her.
They're her both. Daddy. Her calling him daddy.
Mm-hmm.
But when there's lines, so there's just some great quotable fun moments. My favorite that we haven't talked about yet are the, he goes through the photo shoot and there's the vampire girls that are
oh
there.
My God.
And they are like, come home with us. I can't, but you are very attractive. We know. We actually found each other very attractive. He goes, whoa. I guess I could take some time for my fans.
Yeah, like, why is that an incentive? I find my sister attractive. Look, oh, okay, well, then I guess I'll start talking to you more.
I figured he saw a three-way coming, and he went for it.
Yeah, I guess there's nothing better than homosexual incest.
Oh, no, you put it that way.
I think that's where he saw through them, because he leaned down to kiss the top of their hands to find that
the
symbol.
Well, his feelings for Maria helped him overcome their temptation.
Oh, right. Another creepy conversation with creepy PhD and creepy Maria.
Okay, so as an aside, it kind of creeped us all out that the PhD's daughter kept calling him daddy. What is there an age where you should stop calling your father daddy? Like, what is that age? What is that cutoff?
12.
12?
12.
I mean, I think there's a line
he has a definitive answer.
Publicness to that. You know what I mean?
Daddy, like, is weird after 12.
I mean, I think if you're in the privacy of your own home and you're not being creepy Maria to, you know, yell like, you know, daddy, come help me with this or whatever is right. One thing, but... Well, the way talks
daddy
about it, or
right
like out in public, where it's like, I don't know, let me go ask my daddy.
Yeah.
Daddy?
Daddy.
Yeah, it's like, oh, that's gross.
Yeah.
I guess, I mean, the reason I ask is like, I knew girls specifically who continued calling their father daddy like well into their late teens, early 20s. And I found that strange.
Undateable.
It is.
Yeah.
But anyway, sorry, I digress.
There's a user out there that's like, that's questioning her whole life, like, oh man, am I weird?
Don't kink shame, Dave.
I'm not. What, me?
If someone is a listener of this podcast and that question is making them question their whole life, I think there are other questions that might need to be asked. I'm just saying.
You know, if I know somebody who specifically female, I hate to gender it, but like, if it's a woman that I knew who still called her father daddy, and they were like full grown adults, I don't know if that'd be a red flag.
I really think the whole thing does come down to context.
Right. On the other hand, if that same woman still had, let's say, more than no stuffed animals on their bed, that's a big red flag.
Who's next?
So, so Kathleen, how many beers do you require to watch this movie?
For this movie, I said 3.
All right.
So I felt like being comfortably numb in watching this would have made some things a little more silly, like funnier. I probably wouldn't have been so annoyed with Creepy Maria and her terrible acting and her creepy dad and
a lot of hate for Maria
whatever
right now.
But I just there was also, and like I said before, I know I complain about it all the time when there's no story to even understand what the hell is going on in these movies. This one had too much exposition in the sense that, like, we just kept hearing the same thing over and over and over again. It was like, do these actors get paid by the monologue? Like, what is happening? Why are they talking so much? The first wrestling match that he went to, like, just like in the ninja movies, I get that, like, a big part of what people want to see is the wrestling or whatever. But like, the wrestling that took place when he was actually fighting the zombies or whatever, that, okay, fine. And even, like, the one big match that was ultimately against a bad guy who was partial Hulk or something when his mask got ripped off or whatever.
Partial, like, Hulk?
Well, his whole head was, like, green. He looked like the Hulk. Oh, when he, you know, he was just really annoyed, not really angry. But
I'm the annoyed Hulk.
He,
annoyed Hulk.
You wouldn't like me when I'm annoyed.
Right, exactly. So, I don't know. So, I said 3. There were some really good lines in this movie that made me laugh really hard. I loved the line about the robot being looking humanoid, and so therefore he was capable of bipedal transportation or whatever he said. That made me laugh so hard.
Yes,
that's what it was. Capable of bipedal locomotion, which made me laugh. I also liked the snake that was, like, stuck in his face, how it had, like, sound effects when its tongue, like, flickered out, which was one of the texts that I got from Pete, said the snake tongue just went pew, pew, pew.
Is that what it said?
I laughed so
hard. I sent you
at
a
that.
Bunch of texts.
What was you that did, guy going to do me with that snake? What's the difference? Get out.
Right, okay. Exactly. But I don't know. So 3. 3 beers Kathleen. Is what I need.
All right. By the way, that snake was a ball python and is 100% harmless. Oh. All right.
Pete, how many bottles are you drinking?
How many bottles am I drinking?
Today or just in general?
Right.
To get through this movie.
Right. I only need 2. This was a hootenanny. Hootenanny, yes. I think that's the proper term for
not
this
to be
one.
Confused with a shindig or a hoedown.
Hootenanny usurps the shindig as a far superior partay.
Partay.
right. I think Kathleen got the gist that I thoroughly enjoyed this film, even though gave it some funny barbs, I would imagine. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I only needed 2 beers, because it was 3 might have made it a whole lot more fun, but this was a fun film. I only need 2 beers to enjoy it.
All right, cool. 2 for Pete.
How about yourself, Dave?
What did you think about this film?
I would give this 2 beers, which I know is a better rating than I gave the Santo movie. Mostly because, like, the movie really got me interested in lucha culture. And it made me want to learn more about it. And it was, okay, apart from the fact that it was just a lot of fun. This is a terrible movie. Let's not make any mistake about that.
Oh, it's bad. Yeah, right. Yeah.
I looked it up and the budget for this movie was probably under $1 million.
Oh, easily.
But as far as enjoyability goes, yeah, 2. Did I say 2?
Yep, 2.
You said 2.
Yes, I did say 2.
I think
two.
We're okay. All 2 except Kathleen that went.
I think that's pretty solid.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a solid movie. It was fun.
It wasn't pretentious, obviously. It wasn't insulting or, like, it didn't, I guess, try to be something that it wasn't or, like, insult the viewer.
Oh man, I keep going back to the lost skeleton of Cadavera. There are people that love this movie because it's so bad. It's such a bad B film, and This was a high budget film that made fun of itself and all of its ilk. And it was off-putting to me. Where this one was like, hey, we got a story. We got a budget. This is what we're going to do. We're going to tell a story. And they did it.
Yeah.
And that was great. Yeah. It was wonderful. It wasn't, they weren't trying to be silly. They weren't trying to be serious. And man, like you said, this could have been in the 60s.
A lot of, quote, bad movies are making fun of themselves, like you were saying. Part of their gag, part of, I guess, the appeal of those movies is like, hey, look at how much this movie sucks. And there's none of that irony in this movie. Like, it was a sincere effort. It was a sincere movie.
Oh, that's a good one, Dave. Yep.
I think that's why I liked it.
So, Kathleen.
Yes.
How can our listeners get a hold of us on the interwebs?
Well, dear listener, if you would like to reach out and contact us, you can email us at gbbmnpodcast@gmail.com. You can use that same complicated set of letters to find us on Twitter, or you can find us on Instagram, Good Beer Bad Movie Night, all one word, or the old Facebooks at Good Beer Bad Movie Night. Yep, lost my whole train of thought. That was awesome, Kathleen.
That was great.
Good times.
Perfect. And cut.
Good times.
All right, cool. All right, peace out. I'm done. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Kathleen, for that outro.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, folks, keep an eye out on the Instagrams, the Twitters, and the Facebooks. And until next time.
My fist is the only bride fate has for you. Prepare for a painful consummation. Movie is stupid.
That sounds so dirty.
Well, I guess we already introduced ourselves, so let's skip that.
Allow myself to introduce myself.
These are all things we can edit in and out of the show. So anyway.
Pete is waving at you.
I don't have video, so.
Oh.
Okay. Kathleen, lose the pen, damn it.
Oh, sorry.
Get rid of that pen.
I put it away.
That's all I got. I mean, I was like, no, stop that!
I can't help it. I am a pen clicker.
I know.
Because it's so, oh, God.
Does it really? It's kind of fun.
Oh, that's
Easter egg day.
Terrible.
Ew. Oh,
sorry. I have to pee real bad.
Me too. Okay. And I've given birth, so I can't hold it anymore. Okay.
Did you hear the commotion going on? I just said, clunk, 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 clunk. I'm going to pee my pants.
All right. I got to pee, I guess. I'll be right back.
Okay.
What's Troy doing? Troy's going to pee too?
I don't know. I feel much better now.
Maybe I should pee and just get it over with and...
Yeah.
Okay, fine.
Troy, stop giving him beer. Prepare for a painful confirmation. And that's not the right word. God damn it, it's consummation, not confirmation.